Lesson number 23, Proverbs chapter 20. I'm quite amazed that it has taken 20 chapters for Solomon to really come down on the first topic in the first verse of this chapter. Wine and strong drink. You would think that wine and strong drink would have showed its ugly face earlier, but here it is way down in chapter 20. Wine is a mocker, strong drink a brawler, and whoever is intoxicated by it is not wise. Well, do we need to add any commentary to that? I think most of us are old enough to realize that, yeah, that's right. Wine just tends to make you ridiculous. When you see somebody just have too much wine, they just get ridiculous sometimes. And then the consumption of strong drink. Now, that's whiskey, I guess. I guess it could be bourbon. I guess it could be scotch. Wait a minute, all that's whiskey, right? Now, I don't know. Is any pros here on whiskey? Anybody know all the different types? Nobody's going to confess? It's all called liquor. That's right. It's just a hard drink. You know, it's interesting because with just about everybody, there's a point in time where they're drinking hard liquor that they become rough, they become noisy, they become quarrelsome. And, you know, almost as a whole, we talk about strong drink, people who drink strong drink. We talk about them being a mean drunk or a sleepy drunk, yeah. More than not, they become mean drunks. That's what happens to them. We can pretty much say that as a whole, not always, but pretty much as a whole. People who lose control of their faculties or behavior because of wine and strong drink are just fools. They just become fools. Verse 2, the terror of a king is like the growling of a lion. He who provokes him to anger forfeits his own life. We saw the same verse basically back in chapter 19, verse 12. Nothing is more dreadful than the anger of a king who cares nothing for the life of another human being. Now, we don't see this so much in America with our leaders, but still across the world, clear across the world and all the way down to the border south of us and then across the Pacific and Atlantic Oceans, leaders there really do not care for the human life that they rule over. They will send them into battle. They'll send them into danger. And even when you get down into religious groups, they will send them into battle and they'll send them into danger to fight their wars for them. But the thing that's worst of all of that is when you have an angry king who will say, off with their heads. Now, we laugh at that, but remember, whenever Alice in Wonderland was being written, it was being written because there was a king who would say, and a queen who would say, off with their heads. That's how much they valued human life. So it really is a true statement. Solomon understands that if you are a person who is living under a king who is a tyrant, that king's anger can come towards you like a roaring lion. Now listen, we can filter that on down to bosses. Now they may not be able to kill you, but they can sure fire you because of their anger. And we can filter it on down into classrooms. And we can filter it on down into family units if we want to, because it's the same everywhere. We have to be careful with how we treat and how we relate to the head of whatever organization we're part of. Verse 3 says, keeping away from strife is an honor for a man. Did you catch that? Keeping away from strife is an honor for a man. Some people have the ability to stay away from strife. Oh, it may stir up, but they have a way of being kind of like Teflon and getting out of it. But any fool will quarrel, it says. Now, some people live every day of their life with the purpose of being upset with somebody, being angry with somebody. I know three people that I know. One I've met here at the church, two others from past life, one from high school, one from some other churches, and then one from this church, that I guarantee you they get up every day with the intent on making somebody's life miserable. I think they even try to make somebody's life miserable by the way they snore at night. It's just the way they are. They absolutely speak no sensible things to anyone. And you know what's interesting? It doesn't take you long when you meet a person like the three that I'm talking about that you realize this person has an anger problem. This person is angry at all people. This person finds no joy anywhere. This person brings havoc on everybody's life that they come in contact with. We know people like that. I know three that I know for sure that they live every day of their life like that. Two of them claim to be Christians. And I doubt, I should not judge. But they say, the Lord says through the scripture, that we will know you by your fruits. The reality is the two that I know need an encounter with the Lord. And here's what's so sad. They are so religious in everything they do, but they're mean about it. Mean about it. You don't have to be around a person very long to know if he's a man of honor. Simply by the way he handles himself, by the way he reacts to everything that happens around. He stays away from strife, in other words. What a good man that is. It's something that we should all strive to be, whether we're man or woman. We should strive to be a person who stays away from strife. Verse 4 says, the sluggard does not plow after the autumn, so he begs during the harvest and has nothing. You know, we always talk about getting out there in the winter, and right after in January, February, and tilling up the ground and getting our crops in. It was a real shocker to me when I finally realized late in life, I learned it from my wife's grandfather who raised wheat. Wheat has to go through a cold winter. Did you know that? Has to go through a cold. Like some frost on it, in fact. So you do a little research and you find out, hey, Solomon is right. Even in Solomon's day, what they did was back about the late September, Septembers in Israel have some blustery and cold days. And in fact, Israel is on the same latitude as about above Dallas, about the Oklahoma line. You know, I live just 35 miles off the Oklahoma line from the time I guess it would be kindergarten through second grade. And I know first and second grade, we had lots of snow days. It was cold in the winter times. And up in Oklahoma, when you get a snow day, you don't get to stay home. You go on to school because they have everything they need to clear the roads. The cold days, even north of Dallas, I know that first couple of weeks of September, we'd have our very first football games. It would be cold on a Friday night. In Israel, and that's about the same latitude that Israel is, especially Jerusalem is on. Jerusalem, in that time, in September, you had these cold days. But in September was a time when you went out and plowed the field so that in mid-October you could plant the wheat seeds so that they could get a little growth and get the cold on them through the winter, and then they could grow and they could produce in the spring. Amazing, just amazing to me. Well, the sluggard, the lazy person, it's too cold outside. I'm not going to go plow that field. They don't go plow the field. That means that it's not ready for the seed. If it's not ready for the seed, you know what that means. It doesn't come up right. It means that when it's time to be harvesting, there is no harvest. When it's time to be selling, there's nothing to sell. The lazy person doesn't get out and plow in the autumn. He doesn't do the work at the proper time, in the proper way, to get the proper results. So, a lazy person is that way. Now, remember, you can take this proverb about not plowing in the autumn, and you can take it all the way down to, do you turn your IRS reports in on the right time? Do you file at the right time? Do you do what's proper at the right time with your taxes? Do you do what's proper at the right time with the way you fix your meals? Do you do the things proper and at the right time with how you run your household? Do you do the things that are proper in the right time to take care of your swimming pool? Well, how'd that get in here? Let me tell you something. If you're not running your swimming pool the right number of hours for cleaning with the right number of chemicals and all that, do you know what you're going to end up with? A mess. A mess. I know. My family, we've had swimming pools for 20-something years. And I know one thing about swimming pools, and that is I don't know enough to know how to keep them clean. And it is worth it for me to hire somebody to keep it clean. But what's interesting about that is if he doesn't show up 1 week, because you never know when they come, you know. They just kind of show up and leave. You never know when they come. But you know about 3 days later when they didn't show up, when your pool's getting a little milky. So it is. But they'll send you a bill. So now I've learned that if my pool starts looking milky, I call them and say, "Hey, Tony, did you show up this week?" "No, sir, I wasn't able to get there." "Okay, I'll write that off your bill." And he always sends me a full bill, and I always have to write down, "Remember, Tony, you did not come this week." I do it. He just loves me. He just loves me. He keeps coming. I think I'm one of his only customers now. At least I'm paying him something. Sluggard. Lazy. Lazy, lazy, lazy. Knows what he's doing. When he's there, it's perfect. You know people like that? They know what they're doing. They know how to do it easy. They can look at it at you and tell you what to do, and yet they're just too lazy to come do it. Do you know why he's too lazy to come do it? He likes verse 1. In this. Do you remember what verse 1 was? A little wine, a little strong drink. Surprised none of y'all told me what whiskey and bourbon and all that stuff was. Verse 5, a plan. A plan in the heart of a man is like deep water, but a man of understanding draws it out. This is a verse for me. Maybe not be a verse for you, but it ought to be a verse for you, but it's a verse for me. This is more about the man of understanding than it's about the plan of the heart. Person comes into my office. You know, phone calls to me are not a 5-minute phone call. Phone calls to me are a 20-minute phone call. And when you come into my office for a appointment, it's not a 30-minute visit. You come in with struggles. You come in with a plan. You come in with problems. It is my job to find out what the problem is. But you know, very few people come into my office with the intent of telling me right off what their problem is. No, they want to talk about something that's sitting on my shelf, or they want to talk about my family, or they want to talk about their family or whatever. And finally, after their time is up, and I'll say, "Listen, we've been in here 35 minutes, and we're 5 minutes past our time. What did you come in here for?" Then they start laying it out. That's when I start having to look at my calendar to see what's coming next, because we're in trouble. It's going to take 2 hours of talking with this person to figure out how I can help them. In some cases, I have to say to them, "Listen, our time's up. Next time you come in here, you got to make another appointment, because I've got people waiting out there. The next time you come in, we need to start right here with your problem." "Well, what's going to happen, you know, financially with me, with my rent and everything?" I say, "Listen, our time is up. You're going to have to come back. Now, you can go out there and see if you can make an appointment, see what if I have some more time later today, but you're going to have to go and come back, because you don't come in and do business. You don't come in and get to the point." Anybody in here who deals with people that are coming to you, you know what I'm talking about. When a person comes and sits down in front of you, you want them to get to the point right now, not 30 minutes into the conversation. So it takes a man of understanding, though, to go deal with all that stuff. What normally happens when I deal with folks is they have the answer within what they're telling me. They've got the answer. They've run by the answer. They just don't know which of the answers they have that they should do. And in almost every case, it is what I do is I turn around and say, "Listen, remember you mentioned this? That's your best answer. That's what will work. A man of understanding pulls out of the plan of a person, out of that deep well of yuck that they've gotten themselves into, the answers they have to get themselves out. By the way, it's not a proverb of Solomon in this chapter. It was in last chapter. If you are the one who pulls someone out of a mess, now this is my paraphrase, you will have to pull them out of a mess again. If they pull themselves out of the mess, they're less likely to dig as deep a hole next time. But they're going to get back in that mess. And if you allow them to dig themselves out of that hole again, they will dig a less deep hole the third time. It's the only way they learn. And if you have kiddos that you're having to pull out of a mess every time you turn around, guess what? You're going to have to pull them out of a mess until you are gone and they have nobody else to turn to. Be careful. Make sure the person who digs the hole fills it back in.
I have grandchildren.
You have grandchildren that do that. Mm-hmm. Yes. Yes. We all have relatives that do that. Verse 7. A righteous man who walks in his integrity. How blessed are his sons after him. I paused on that on purpose because you need to understand, a righteous man who walks in integrity has set the standard of what the community thinks about the sons before the sons are even old enough to walk. Oh, those boys. I'm excited about having those boys in my class, my first grade class. You know, they're from a good family. A good family because of the integrity of the father. They're from a good family. Oh, those boys may do some childish things along the way and to be expected. And they're still good boys. And especially when a teacher or someone else sees that son or those sons and children learning from their mistakes and not making the same mistakes twice. Oh, those are good kids. They came from good stock. You've heard that. They've come from a good family because of the integrity of the father. But sooner or later, the integrity of those sons and the thinking about those sons will be determined by what those sons do. And no amount of integrity of the father can help them, because they will have to stand on their own feet when they become adults. But I will tell you this. Solomon is correct. A man of integrity gives his sons a head start. If your father loves verse number 1 in this chapter, he's an alcoholic and a drunk, then he did not give you the opportunity. I guess there's two ways of looking at that. A positive, a half glass half full and a glass half empty way. If your father was a drunk, there's only one way, and that's up for you. If your father was a man of integrity, then you're already up on the pedestal pretty high, so you can go either way. You can fall or you can rise. And all you have to do is just do what's right, and you'll just continue to rise. In one way, you have a head start. In another way, you don't. But Solomon is right. The blessed are the sons who follow after a man of integrity. A king who sits on his throne, verse 8, of justice disperses all evil with his eyes. Now think about that. The king looks around and he sees those who are coming to be witnesses. The king has the authority to throw you in jail or to let you go, and you're not even the one who's being accused of anything. I have had the opportunity to see people sitting in the audience area of a court be removed from the court by the judge for making too much noise. After giving warnings 2 or 3 times, the king, who's the judge, has the authority to disperse disperse judgment and dispense with evil within his courts. Let's say that you decide you want to be a witness and you are called to be a witness. Let me tell you something. If you're called to be a witness, you better not lie. Because if you lie, it's going to catch up with you. And if you perjure yourself in court, it would have been better for you not to have been a witness at all than to have perjured yourself. Have you ever stuck your nose in somebody else's business? Have you ever decided that you were so passionate about somebody that you wrote letters and you wrote emails on a subject and you called the protective agencies, et cetera, and just caused all sorts of havoc for a family that because of things that you didn't think was right? Then lo and behold, the proof comes back that most of you were in and out and you didn't know the truth of what was going on. And so what comes to you is a cease and desist and a no trespass that's delivered to you by an officer of the court. And it also says to you, do not make any contact with any third party under penalty of this. Remember last week we talked about busybodies? We talked about gossips? We talked about people who got in other people's business? Solomon's talking about if you're that type of person, when you stand before the judge is going to, because of what he can do, quell the evil that will happen in his courtroom. Because if you do evil in a courtroom, you have a good chance that you're going to get caught and you're going to be the one who faces the judge. That's what he's talking about here. Differing weights, verse 9. Who can say, I have cleansed my heart, I am pure from my sin? Can anyone say that you have a pure conscience? Can any of you say, I have cleansed my heart? I am pure from my sins. Can anyone cleanse your own heart? Any of y'all? Can anyone purify yourself from sin? A man can try as much as he wants to try to do it, but he can't do it. It takes someone else. And in this case, it takes the Lord. The Lord is the only one who can purify us from our sins. Verse 10, it's going to come up. This topic is going to come up twice in this lesson. Differing weights and differing measures, both of them are an abomination or abominable to the Lord. The Lord likes fairness. Now, whether you like it or not, the Lord is fair to all of us. You say, well, wait a minute. The rain falls on the good and the bad. If I'm good, why is it raining on me? Because you need the rain. Well, wait a minute, I'm bad. Why is it raining on me? Because you need the rain. Why is this happening to me? Why is that? Because you need what's happening to you. But the Lord is fair across the board. And the Lord does not like differing weights. Here's a good example. Let's say that you have an American gold coin. And it's stamped on it. 1 ounce of gold. Now let's say you have a South African 1 ounce of gold. Now, if you take an American 1 ounce of gold and a South African ounce of gold and put them together side by side, does anybody know where I'm headed on this? Does anybody know? Where am I headed? They're not the same. A South African ounce of gold is shorter and smaller, skinnier. But they don't weigh the same because the ounce is not an ounce. What they call an ounce is not the same as what we call an ounce. And it was shocking to me the first time I saw, here's a South African 1 ounce, here's an American 1 ounce. Well, wait a minute, something's wrong. Well, you know how you figure this out, don't you? You buy 2 or 3 ounces of American gold and you ask for it and they send it to you, and you buy 2 or 3 ounces of South African gold and they send it to you, and you realize that when you go down to sell it down at the local food town or wherever they're going to buy, you know, I will buy gold. The South African that you paid just as much for is not the same weight of gold in American. It's different. Now, any person who has dealt with that knows that, I guess, but I never dealt with it, so I didn't know it until it happened to moi. And was I shocked? What he's talking about here also is like this. You say, I want 5 pounds of flour. And so you go to the merchant. The merchant takes out his stone that weighs 5 pounds, and he puts it on one side of the scale. The scale, of course, goes down. And he adds flour to the other side, to the bucket, until it comes up and it's even. And you say, that's 5 pounds of flour. But what happens if that merchant has taken that 5-pound weight and gone to the sandpaper and sanded off, about a quarter inch of the weight? You say, I want 5 pounds of flour. He puts in the weight, and he adds. What did he just do to you? Unbalanced weight. It's the wrong type, unfair, differing measures. And then there's always the one. I love this one. He knows his weight is empty, but he also knows that the person who's buying the flour goes home and weighs it for themselves. He's been down this road. So whenever he weighs out the 5 pounds of flour for this person, he goes, I'm going to give you a little extra because you're such a good customer. You ever seen that before? Yes. So he goes home and he weighs it. He's got 5 pounds plus, and he's happy. Somebody had to catch him. That is an abomination to the Lord. The Lord hates that. Verse 11. It is by his deed that a lad distinguishes himself if his conduct is pure and right. Not much commentary needed on that. It is true. Solomon already knows the trustworthy man of integrity may have distinguished himself as a lad. Listen, if you have a reputation of being a rascal growing up and through your 20s, when you get to 30 and you want to be a trustworthy and respected person, you're probably going to have to move someplace where nobody knows you. You're probably to start all over again because you're already set. People already think about you the way that they're going to think about you. And if you are a lad of integrity among all the lads, then the people are going to think about you like that. And here's what's interesting. If you're a lad that has distinguished himself far above all the other lads, and you're 30 or 40 years old, and you do something wrong, do you know what happens real quickly to people like that? They seem to fall harder and faster, especially if they do something really wrong. There's the little things that they can do, people overlook. If you do something really wrong, it's not good. Your integrity falls. And then, you know, if you're a rascal growing up, and you're a rascal at age 40 and you do something wrong, people go, that's just him. He's just being a rascal. Until he does something that, of course, the courts have to deal with. Verse 12, the hearing ear and the seeing eye, the Lord has made them both. Listen, this is not just about the Lord's, our eyes and our ears. This is more than that. The Lord has made them for a purpose. He's made them so that we can use them to seek his divine will and his divine glory in all that we do. We see and we hear. We see and we hear. That's how we learn most things, by seeing and hearing. And may it be for the glory of the Lord. Those things which should be cast off should be cast off. Those things which should be incorporated in our lives should be incorporated. Verse 13. Do not love sleep, lest you become poor. Open your eyes and you will be satisfied with food. Food, sleep, and poor. What is Solomon talking about there? Now, sleep is necessary. It's important. But you should sleep at the proper time. And until the modern age, people slept at night and they worked during the day. Slept at night, worked during the day. In Solomon's day, that's the way it was. Anybody who stayed up in the middle of the night was probably somebody who was dealing with Proverbs chapter 20, verse 1, wine. We keep going back to that. I could have had a lot of fun with that if he'd brought it up a little earlier. When I get to heaven, I'm going to ask Solomon why he waited so long to talk about wine and strong drink. But we know that's what people do. They stay up, they drink, and they watch all those shows on TV where they're trying to sell you dresses and knives and jewelry and all that all night long. I don't think Solomon and them had that problem back in his day where they were watching TV and doing that. But the truth is, there was a time to work and there was a time to sleep. If you worked when you were supposed to work, you had money to buy food. You weren't in poverty. If you slept when it was time to work, it would lead to poverty pretty quick. So what Solomon is saying is, if you're going to be a sluggard, and if you're going to sleep when it's time to work, you're going to fall into poverty. And when you're falling into poverty, you're not going to have anything to eat. But if you'll just get up and do what you're supposed to do, then you'll have food and you'll be satisfied by that. The daily needs will be met if you do what you're supposed to do when you're supposed to do it. Verse